Hey everyone, welcome to the Mobile User Acquisition Show. In the Mobile User Acquisition Show, we feature interviews with the smartest folks in mobile and growth who share invaluable, actionable, tactical insights on every aspect of mobile growth and marketing, not to mention some adjacent areas just as well. The Mobile User Acquisition Show is presented by me, Shamant Rao, CEO of the mobile growth marketing firm Rocketship HQ, and produced by Karishma Sundaram, our superstar content marketing manager at Rocketship HQ. Each episode includes strategies, tips, and pointers from the leading edge of mobile growth marketing that you can use to unlock tremendous growth for your app in a sustainable and capital-efficient manner. Our guest today is Chris Pham, the co-founder and CEO at Tengen. In our conversation today, Chris talks about the paradigm of attribution modeling. We have previously discussed the flaws of last-touch attribution on the show before, and it is a particularly critical time for attribution as we move away from idea phase. In today's conversation, Chris illustrates how much of the information that we feel we are losing can be estimated from other angles by using models to arrive at these metrics from the metrics that we do have available. Models may spell inaccuracy for many marketers, but it's easy to forget that many of the metrics we use today are also model-based and are also some sorts of estimates. This was a fascinating dive into the mechanics of attribution in a world with incomplete data, along with its many challenges and opportunities. Enjoy. I'm very excited to welcome Chris Pham to the Mobile User Acquisition Show. Chris, welcome to the show.
Thanks. It's great to be here.
Absolutely, Chris. I'm thrilled to have you also because I feel like you and I first connected in 2015 or so, and I'm glad that our paths have continued to cross.
Yeah, it's a small world, for sure.
It's a small world, and it can seem like an eternity. 6 years can seem like forever. I'm also excited and thrilled to talk to you about what's changing in our worlds just now. Certainly a big part of what's changing is measurement and tracking. And certainly you have very unique perspectives, very interesting insights, all of which I would like to dive into today. Let's start by having you tell us about what you mean when you say attribution modeling. How would you define that in the way that you have described it?
Yeah, sure. So we're a company that basically tries to help app developers figure out their return on investment. And with the upcoming changes in iOS, a lot of the responsibility has shifted to Apple in order to do the attribution piece of the puzzle. And some of the things that are left hanging are the developers understanding what to do with what has been given to them. There's not a lot of great tools and not a lot of easy usable tools to understand what most app developers are used to, things like retention and cohorted metrics. So what we tend to do is focus on the attribution modeling piece. And the way we would describe this is a signal-based approach, where since we are no longer expecting to have a lot of IDFA for deterministic attribution anymore, we can take the signals that Apple, through its SK Ad Network APIs, provide in order to do LTV and ROI estimations for modeling attribution. We are moving away from the deterministic world, whether it be fingerprinting or IDFA-based attribution, to one which is a lot more privacy-centric, according to Apple, where things are not based on identifiers anymore. They're based on heuristics and signals that they're able to provide through their APIs. Mm-hmm. And so attribution modeling is really this concept that we're talking about more frequently with developers to effectively still keep the metrics they've always wanted, which is LTV and ROI, using a new methodology.
Understood. So what you're saying is, look, you're not going to have exact, precise metrics anymore. but those metrics can be modeled. Metrics can be estimated given the somewhat incomplete information we do have from Apple. Mm-hmm. Can you speak to what some of the inputs in these models are? What are some of the variables that are used
sure.
to compute these metrics?
Yeah, sure. LTV at the app level can still easily be calculated and is very privacy centric according to Apple using IDFVs. Mm-hmm. So it's very possible to still calculate downstream metrics off of an IDFV and also cohort on top of those metrics using IDFVs. So the analytics for the app level is still very well preserved. SK Ad Network introduces the concept that there's no identifier anymore that ties it to a specific campaign. But there are signals, for example, like postbacks that are sent to the ad networks that can be shared as raw data, and even signals like counts of postbacks that have come in or mm-hmm. sources of that information can be helpful in modeling out how you would distribute or allocate the LTVs that you can still measure. We basically look at these two types of signals. There are the raw level data, which is SK postbacks, which Apple does send to the ad networks, as well as the aggregate level data that some of the ad networks can still provide. So you can take these two inputs and try to map that and try to allocate according sure. to the LTVs that have been developed.
Sure. I think something I would underscore in what you said is you still have app level ROAS and LTV numbers, which I think can be a fact that can be somewhat easy to forget in a lot of the conversation that's going on. And mm-hmm. I know you said it's based off of IDFV. And I also like to point out to developers that I'm speaking to that that data is available in the analytics systems. Mm-hmm. And it is present in the MMPs if all they looked at was the overall aggregate numbers. So mm-hmm. in a sense, the IDFV is not a mythical, strange metric. It is what already lives in their systems and used to be available.
Yeah. Right?
I think that's a good call out. And I think it's something that's helpful and useful for people to understand and underscore that a lot of the analytics just doesn't go away.
Absolutely. A good example using the IDFV to generate what we call attribution modeling. Let's say you see an IDFV come in today, and then we see 10 postbacks from a specific campaign for a specific conversion value come in within a time period that's acceptable by Apple, that 24 to 48 hour window post conversion value. So let's say that a conversion value zero happens today, and then we see 10 conversion value zeros happen within the next 2 days. A very simplistic argument for determining a probability might be that that IDFV had a 1 in 10 chance that it's linked or matched to any of those IDFVs. So there's a lot of modeling that can go into what SK Ad Network does provide, as well as some of the other signals that still exist to determine sure. these types of probabilities.
Sure. And I think that's a useful simplistic model, which certainly you can add more variables to. One postback today, 10 conversion values in the next 2 days. And obviously you can layer on geos, you can layer on channels.
Exactly.
And not to mention sources
exactly.
and campaigns are subject to the privacy threshold, which is a whole
exactly.
different conversation altogether. In the approach you described, as you pointed out, are calculating probabilities, there is going to be some amount of inaccuracy here.
Mm-hmm.
So what are some of the big drivers of accuracy and inaccuracy?
Sure.
And in what situations do you find, okay, this is a good predictor, this is a good way to make decisions? What situations is this a bad way to make decisions?
We've been testing a few of these models in the last, I would say, 3 to 6 months with actual data and developers. And we're in this period of time where we still have the benefit of using IDFA tracking. So we were able to look at some of the error rates on various types of models that we've built here. And it can go as high as 10% discrepancy, but we find that that's actually pretty good with various granularity. For example, conversion value is one type of granularity, but you can also start to layer in other things within the conversion value, like assigning 2 bits for a certain type of signal that you want to give. I know that some developers have used even more explicitly install day as a specific driver for a part of those bits that are allocated to you. And so that can help you with attribution as well. We haven't personally tested those types of models. There's also the geos that come from the device off. And then also sometimes you can start to layer in some of the other dimensions as well, like site ID that are given to you. And that's actually one of the newer things, I think, that are introduced, where these site IDs are actual app store IDs now, and that can change the way things work. As we know, like some of the ad networks out there, they obfuscate their site IDs, and this can actually help in some ways. One thing to also point out, we're talking about probabilities here. This is very different than what the industry has started. They've rehashed this idea of fingerprinting as probabilistic. This is not the same type of probabilities that we're talking about. We're talking about building probabilities on top of what's available by Apple, as opposed to just fingerprinting and the old style of tracking and being probabilistic with that. That's something to also be mindful of.
Sure. I think it's important to qualify probabilistic is not fingerprinting. And I know you talked about some of the inputs that go into these models. As of just now, the SANs, which is Facebook and Google, at the very least, are not going to share the postbacks with MMPs. And Apple Search, ironically and interestingly, is not going to use SCAD network. Does that mean that in an attribution modeling paradigm, these sources are going to be less accurate than the sources that actually do have SCAD network postbacks?
Accuracy is actually hard to justify at this point for a variety of reasons, because everything is modeled. The whole industry was bought into matching last clicks to the install, and to a certain extent, that also is modeled. So it just became standard that that was the case. But if you really think about it, that is a model in and of itself.
Sure.
And so what we deem as accurate is up to the marketer. But I can say that there are going to be differences in the way each channel can be modeled. So for example, the SANs, who expose less of the SK postbacks, they will expose some of the aggregate data. If you were to visit the Google dashboard, they would show you, oh, you got this many conversion values from this campaign. You could essentially use that data to model off, to try to mesh it together with the data you have about your LTVs. And you can allocate it appropriately. This can actually all be done in Excel today, where let's say you see a specific campaign has 10 conversion values of conversion value one. You can still do that same type of math if you know that for that specific date.
So there's going to be some aggregate data still available around the conversion values for the SANs. So it's not like it's totally high level, totally black box per se. And I know you talked about, look, even last click is a model, and I don't want to put words in your mouth, but I think you implied that there's no such thing as accurate. I'm reminded of a quote, I forget which book this was or who said this, but it's all models are inaccurate. Some models are useful. And I may be butchering that quote.
No, that's a good quote. I've never heard of it, but it's,
yeah,
it's kind of
I may
I'm
be
thinking.
Butchering that. Yeah, exactly. And I think that's a good point to keep in mind, because as you said, last click, everyone said, hey, that is the way to go. And I think the question to ask is, look, is attribution modeling with the help of probabilities, is it more useful than just doing SCAD network blindly? I think that's what I'm hearing you say and imply.
Yeah, I think that we certainly see in our tests with our developers that it is useful. There's also a quote, the one-eyed man is king in a blind world. And so you may not have that same level of confidence, but you still have a general direction that you're shooting for. There are other things that people have done in the past, such as very simple regression modeling, the sales track roughly in the same way, similar to mixed modeling and incrementality, all of these types of solutions where you run a campaign, you spend a bunch of money, you get some installs, and you see the correlation to sales or revenue. What we're developing here does have some of that similarity. It's somewhere in between this last click type of deterministic modeling and mixed media type of incrementality modeling. So I think the recommendation is you have to have your eye on each type of model and just the business in general. If you see sales go up in general and you can correlate it to certain characteristics, it's helpful. Yeah. And if not, then you iterate on what the best solution is for you.
Yeah. And I think that's a sort of conversation I'm having with people as well, like lately, because the media mix modeling is not right for a lot of companies. And it's what P&G uses. And I would also point out, and tell me if you would agree, if an advertiser is very small, they're running one channel, would it be accurate to say attribution modeling is not really the best fit? Should they just use that one channel with SCAD network postmax and make all of their decisions off of that? Or would you disagree with that characterization?
Yeah, I would say so. If you're just using one channel, use all of those tools in that channel simply because one, it's easier. And two, they're likely optimized for whatever you're trying to do. So if you are solely spending on Facebook, for example, and you have no plans to introduce other types of channels, what's the point of modeling anything? Just use the Facebook system. But I would also say when we talk about starting to introduce other channels, it is very important to try to model the behavior and the interactions between each of the channels as best as you can, which is, as you say, like what the old school style P&G mixed media modeling is about. I would say specific to at least our types of clients who are more on the gaming side and have much earlier LTV thresholds, you need a different type of modeling than mixed media modeling simply because mixed media modeling takes too long. You're running these massive regressions and that requires lots of data to draw conclusions. And so that's why you need something in the middle between what IDFA was and this mixed media modeling incrementality type of solution.
Yeah. Just to also double click on some of the things you said about, look, mixed media modeling is great for the P&Gs. Help me understand what about, let's just say, a typical gaming company makes attribution modeling suited for them?
Yeah, sure. Gaming companies look to understand their acquisition channels a lot faster. Their LTVs tend to top out much faster for users in their games. As the extension of the LTV like goes farther into the future, it's harder to predict or understand that behavior where it's going to go. Procter & Gamble, when they run a TV ad, it's not like someone just gets up and starts buying Procter & Gamble things. They have to go to the store. Maybe it crosses their mind a year later, and that's when they need to try to correlate those things. But for games, you download the game and then it's happening right in front of you. That type of LTV is a lot faster. And so you want to be able to have a faster turnaround than something like a mixed media model. The casual gaming space might be in between where you might see a Rovio ad because Rovio users maybe spend money. They have a longer life cycle. Their retention is much higher in the yearly type of community. Whereas you look at a hyper casual game, everything happens within 14 days, 30 days.
Right. And you would argue a lot of things happen within the first 24 hours. Mm-hmm. And a lot of those signals do get captured by SCAD network, but that's not the complete picture. So what I'm hearing you say is that because the feedback loop, so to speak, of the LTVs is relatively short. For the vast majority of consumer apps, not just gaming, I would argue, right? Certainly the vast majority of subscription apps, a lot of signal happens on day zero, even though the LTV plays out over many months. So I can see why this sort of model is certainly more suited. Just to stay on the track of this is a model, how does attribution modeling differ from multi-touch attribution? Mm. Obviously, we know and understand the differences, and I know the folks will understand, but talk to me about why not do multi-touch attribution, or when does multi-touch attribution make sense, when does attribution modeling make sense?
I think what we're seeing is that SK Ad Network has really taken over some of the deterministic parts of attribution. They're the ones actually determining whether or not an ad network gets credit for something based on its own methodology, which right now is last click, but I think they're also going to introduce impression-based type of modeling as well. Multi-touch, I think, was always this thing on the horizon where it's like, what if you have a TV ad? And like, what if you see this thing over here? You have a lot of different touch points that cannot just be accounted for. And how do you factor that in? So I think what's happening here is SK Ad Network has a bunch of signals that it gives you based on whatever it thinks. The networks have a bunch of signals based on whatever it thinks. And you may have your own signals based on whatever you think. So you're just building a model of whatever's available to you. I don't know if that's actually multi-touch, but it's just using whatever's available to you as fast as you can.
I see. What you're saying is what is available is limited compared to what you might need for multi-touch.
True multi-touch.
I
Yeah,
see.
exactly. And it's also limited by what may or may not happen with respect to Apple, how they view privacy and all of this stuff down the road. They've basically taken a huge chunk of deterministic attribution, and they're actually pushing the industry to think about things beyond just that. They're thinking about all these other signal-based approaches, which essentially is multi-touch, but it's not explicitly sort of determined by the industry in any sort of way.
In the way that you described attribution modeling, for an app developer or mobile app company that wants to build this out in-house, what does that roadmap or approach or plan look like for somebody that wants to build this out? And also, is there a lightweight way that they might build an MVP, maybe just in an Excel?
Absolutely, it can be done in Excel. The simplest way to describe it is you download a bunch of aggregate data and allocate linearly based off of what's been downloaded to your LTVs. That in itself is a type of model, and you're using data that is in aggregate form. I think more sophisticated models include getting raw SK postback data, getting access to whatever data you can get your hands on in terms of what is allowed by Apple, and then just modeling your user behavior alongside of it. Ironically, where we were in this idea of a state before, you now need a lot more gusto with your own modeling and data analytics and science than ever before. So it's not like you actually go back in time, you actually go forward in time in some respects that you have to think harder about these problems.
I also like that you described a simpler version of this. So, yes, you can get a lot more sophisticated and accurate, but a basic V1, as you described, could happen with an Excel sheet. For people who want to get a taste of what that could look like, can you elaborate on what that approach could look like? So if people wanted to say, see for themselves a V1 or an MVP, if you can elaborate on that process, that would be great.
Yeah, sure. Let's say you're running a campaign on Google and Google allows you to download a CSV with a bunch of your conversion values and your campaigns and even your geos in some cases. You would see how many conversion values came in for a specific geo and a specific date and a specific campaign. Then you would also look at your actual data from your LTV side of the equation and just allocate based on those numbers. We had 10 conversions in Russia for this conversion value, 20 in the US about the same conversion value. And then we had X amount of users in both of these. So you can allocate based on those types of heuristics. You could come up with LTVs that are tied to a campaign, but at an aggregate level, which is exactly what Apple's after. You can still do your LTV math and all of your estimations in marketing at an aggregate level, just like with user privacy.
Certainly. I think that can be a powerful approach to work with what Apple wants and still get a lot of visibility and also get a taste of what things could look like if they had the sophistication to actually use the postbacks and build out a more sophisticated model.
I think one of the biggest fears I've seen so far is just that people think that LTV and ROI and retention are all going away. If you look at the surface of what SK Ad Network provides, yes, that's true. The way things were done before, certainly those metrics go away. But if you look at what you're given in terms of what you can model after, they don't actually go away. They just become estimates and they become models. You can iterate to a place where you can feel comfortable using certain channels more than others. And I do think that's the part of reinvention of this industry that is an opportunity for a lot of developers who take that challenge on. Because as we all know from the beginning of all this, the developers who actually solve that piece faster end up being the top one percentile. They're able to figure out their marketing and judge their ROI and ROAS still. And the ones who sort of just back down and say, I'm flying blind, I'm just going to lower all my CPIs or CPMs, you'll get taken advantage of.
Yeah, well, and the flip side of that is a thought. Some would also look at this as a risk, but I hear you. It's how people navigate that risk that can sometimes make a difference.
My prediction is just that CPMs in the short term, they may come down purely out of fear. But in general, it's not like people don't want to play games. Users still want the contents. They still want to find it, et cetera.
Yeah.
So there will be a period where some of these developers actually figure it out. And then they're willing to bid higher than those others and get more distribution profitably, et cetera, et cetera. Yeah. So there'll just be more volatility in these CPMs over time. I think targeting is layered in there somewhere where your targeting gets destroyed in some of these networks, which is sort of a different problem. But if you kept targeting constant and all these other factors, you'd have more volatility.
Certainly. Yeah, we are moving into a more uncertain world, but we have some models to guide us, some directions to guide us. Chris, this is perhaps a good place for us to wrap. I certainly have had a lot of ideas that are food for thought, certainly things to think about, certainly things to contemplate as we go into this uncertain short-term future. But before we wrap, can you tell folks how they can find out more about you and everything you do?
Sure. You can just simply drop me a line at cfarm@tengen.io and we can take it from there.
Excellent. We will link to that and certainly we will link to Tengen and your LinkedIn and so people can check you out and connect just as well. Wonderful, Chris. This was a wonderful experience. Thank you so much for being on the Mobile User Acquisition Show.
Thanks, Shaman.
Thank you for listening to the Mobile User Acquisition Show. If any of this was helpful or instructive, I would love for you to leave us a review or rating on iTunes, Stitcher, Overcast, or wherever you get your podcast fix. This podcast takes a ton of time, effort, and love to produce, and I deeply value every review and every piece of feedback that you share. Thank you for listening, and I will look forward to sharing our next episode soon.